and welcome to Hey Art, What's Good? We're a podcast where we like to go around to cool art things in the north of England and see what's good with them. My name's Alice.
And my name's Rosie.
And something we like to do here on Hey Art, What's Good? Is to say what's good with us, because we do stuff and it's nice to reflect on how they are good, if they are indeed good.
All about what's good here at Hey Art, What's Good?
Who knew, right? So Rosie, what's good with you this week?
Thank you for asking. What is good with me is that I pretty much just got back from a trip to London with my father, where we attempted and succeeded in seeing 6 plays in 3 days.
Now, doesn't that just sound exhausting?
And it was, but it was amazing at the same time. So I'm going to reel them off real quick because they were fab and each one I really enjoyed, even if my dad didn't enjoy all of them, but it's because he's just seen too much theatre or has it ridiculously high standards, but I'm here for a good time. So we get there, day one. We go to the National Theatre. We go see Peter Gynt, which is based off Peer Gynt. It's a thing.
Sure.
Then next day was the big day. We saw 3 plays at the Globe standing. So no seats for me. We saw Henry IV, Part 1, Part 2, and Henry V.
The sequel.
Literally. So it was like a prequel. Then the... Because it was like, no one knows if like the order he wrote them, but they were all really popular. Like all his kings were really popular.
Yeah.
Because like a bit of history, like, I don't know, the people ate it up. Shakespeare, he knew what they wanted and he gave it to them. But no one knew if like what order. And also he might have killed off characters at one point and then brought them back because they were popular. You know, he just did what he wanted.
Yeah, man.
Just doing his thing. Day after that, we went to the Globe again and saw, what did I see? It's called As You Like It.
Yes.
And it is the play that I am named after, because the main character is called Rosalind. And then we went to like a pub, which is also a theatre, just has a random room in there that's a theatre. We went to go see a play called, like a contemporary play about neo-Nazis called Danelaw.
Oh, okay.
And it was amazing. So
cool.
That's what's good with me.
They all sound like good things, dang.
Yeah, it was a lot, but I wanted to like put it in. And I'm going to make a link later on to why I mentioned all of those.
Okay.
So what's good with you?
Thank you for asking. What's good with me is I recently,
mature.
Yep. Last week, as of the day of recording, I got back from Helsinki.
Oh,
and I went to go visit my brother because he lives over there now. And it was just nice. It was a nice long weekend. Yeah. Went out, saw some art, hung out with these friends, met a dog.
Beautiful.
Just a great, great little time.
Seems like the perfect little getaway.
Yeah, thoroughly enjoyable. And I'm saying it in the podcast, so it will try and prompt me to do it in real life. We went to the National Photography Museum of Finland, and I want to write about an exhibition I saw, so I'll try and remember to do that, Alice.
Like editing Alice.
Yep.
Remember when you said that. Now you got to do it.
Yep.
Sounds so, like we do sound like we're coming across like jet setters, because we're like, we went to Rotterdam. And now I've just come back from London and you've just come back from Helsinki. Yeah. And this episode, we're talking about going to Berwick.
Yes.
So I promise.
All the greats. London, Helsinki, Berwick upon Tweed.
Hey, yeah.
I do love Berwick. But
why are you doing that to Berwick?
It's not a capital city, but hey, it doesn't make it any less
but
capital.
It's a border town, which makes it very historically significant.
That is true. That is true.
And the turnout for the film festival is not to be sniffed at, so none of that.
Okay.
That's poor attitude, Alice.
I apologise, Berwick.
I hope they forgive you, the entire community of Berwick.
We'll see.
Let us know.
Yep. But yes, we went to Berwick, and as you can tell from the title of this episode, we went to check out the Berwick Film and Media Arts Festival 2019. If you cast your minds back a year ago, you'll recall that we did that a year ago as well.
Yeah.
So we enjoyed it so much. We did an episode about it. You can check it out. I'll probably put it in the blog post. It's just a good time, as I said then, and I'll say it now, and I'll probably say it till my dying day. I love a film festival. They're just so much fun.
It's just who Alice is.
It's... sue me.
But they are fun, as a non-filmy person.
Mm-hmm. This one has the added bonus of having just a whole buttload of visual arts in it.
Yeah, like, and I love it as well because it's like, because Berwick's not a huge city, you can kind of like try, well, we try and tackle it. There's too much for like
one day.
Yeah, or yeah. Even I'm not even convinced the weekend. Like, there's no way you could see everything you wanted to see.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday. It's a 4-day festival. Ah, that's too much to say in 4 days. Jeez. But
yeah, there's a lot happening.
But it just means that there's something for everyone.
So good.
Absolutely.
And we're going to attempt to tell you everything we saw. Attempt being the key word, yes. Because we saw so much.
Yes.
But I think we've like picked out some highlights. We've picked out some honourable mentions. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we're just generally here to like tell you what's good.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's kick it off with, I guess, chronological order will work for this because that's how my brain remembers things.
Yes, that's fair. And like, we'll kind of walk you through the day.
Yeah.
But well, like just the best bits.
Yeah. Which was all of it, no.
Step by step. This is actually like a 24-hour recording. Oh, God.
Join us for our podcast-a-thon.
Nope. Don't. Shan't. I won't be joining.
I was going to say, we got off the train. No, we didn't. We got off the bus because the trains were off. It felt like we're on that bus for maybe a million years.
Maybe.
It was only an hour and 45 minutes, as it turns out. But, you know.
We also learned Alice can't be quiet for any amount of time. Yeah. If you leave her to her own devices, she'll just make noises.
Yeah. Sometimes it's a song, sometimes it's not. So
noises.
Yep. But we got off the coach, and just I think worth mentioning, we went walked down this little park next to it called Castle Vale, and you can go along and check out what's left of the old castle. It's just nice and cool to see. Yeah. As Rosie said, it was a border town, so obviously there was lots of conflicts between the English and the Scots, and also it was part of Scotland for like a really long time. So cool, yeah. First of all.
If you like history, Berwick's the place for you.
Mm-hmm. Then we beelined it to town.
Yeah.
To Fuld Yard Gallery, yeah. Which I mentioned last time. It's mint.
Yeah, and it's been like exactly a year, pretty much, since we were last there. And it was so nice because last year we just randomly went to this open studio. We're walking down a street and we see a sign for an open studio. We wander in and we meet this lovely man called Dave.
Yep.
Get chatting for like a long time.
It was, yeah, well over an hour, I want to say. He made us some nice tea. I remember that. Great.
It was a lovely experience. So yeah, we went straight to his gallery and hung out with him and his partner.
Yeah, Morag.
Yeah.
Both very talented artists.
Oh my God, yeah. Just like, and then we got to see, because last year they have a little, lovely little gallery, which is like quite small, but like packed. It's dead good. And then the back is a studio space because they do loads of workshops. They're like printmakers and painters, and they like make paints and do all sorts of they sound like really proactive in the arts community. So last year that space in the back was used for like a film screening. Mm-hmm. They were just running for the gallery, so now we got to see it. Photos on Instagram, by the way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got to see
like workshop glory.
Yeah, and that's like one of the best things about studios. I want to see it in progress. Like, kind of, not like, it's not a mess. It's like a working space. It's evolving. Yeah,
like a useful space.
And then we got to see, well, firstly, they were just so welcoming and lovely. So it was so nice that they were like, that was our first stop.
Yeah.
And then, just generally seeing the artwork in the gallery was cool as well.
Yeah, there's some cool stuff. Like, more I could just... done like a whole series of like what they're called, like the zodiac,
astrology,
like Aquarius, Scorpio, all that kind of stuff,
star symbols. Yeah, kind of, I don't know,
there's a proper term for them, and but she illustrated a bunch of them from this other lady who has translated some poems from a different language or something. It was very cool. I don't know why I'm guessing. I've got a bit of paper right in front of me. It's called Ephemeris, and it's Anglo-Saxon horoscopes translated from Old Scots by this person called Naomi Siemens, I think. And then Morag did the illustrations for them. And they're just so cool. It's like,
they're like
cool,
not
print.
What you'd think of. Like, you look at them and they're obviously like connected. You can sense it. But they're not like obviously anything to do with like star signs or any kind of, you can tell it's like a lot of symbols and a lot of like iconography, but you don't necessarily know what's up, but there's some hints and some clues. And then I love when you find out what they are, because instantly your first thing is you find yours.
Of course.
Scorpio was amazing. Loved it. Because it was like, it kind of like looks like, well, it's a casino and it looks a bit like...
It's like, I'm getting like, cause it's all 60s Miami kind of vibes.
Yeah, because it's like blue and pink and kind of looks neon to me. And there's a girl with this like a tattoo. And
like she looks cool as hell. And I believe they said that the girl is based on their daughter.
Yeah.
Which is very, very nice.
Lovely.
And mine is Aquarius, and it's very, very cool. It's like a person holding a jug of water that's fallen above the head with some playing cards. What are they, you may ask? They're all face
don't
cards.
Don't ask Alice.
And there's like a spade, a heart, and a diamond. So I don't know where... What's the other one? The club. Don't know why there's no club on there, but that's okay.
Can't have them all.
But just really mint, just a really nice series on the wall, and you could like buy them and stuff.
That one was on the cover of a magazine.
Hell yeah, it was. So I can't remember what magazine was. I do have it's it on Instagram. But not with me. Yeah, I'll post all this stuff somewhere.
Yeah.
But that was my first stop, and when we were there, as well as having a delightful catch up, they recommended a different gallery, which we went to, and we'll circle back around later.
Yeah.
But straight after that, we went and got tickets. Mm-hmm. Decide what films we're going to see.
And you do that at the Maltings?
At the Maltings, yes. Like, it's like the home base for all the festival stuff.
It's like the big like cinema theatre sort of situation. Got a nice cafe.
Had a sit on the balcony with a view of a Berwick, which was nice.
Yeah. Berwick's got so many nice nooks and crannies.
Berwick is so pretty,
which
guys.
Is maybe what makes it so good for this festival, because it's in the nooks and crannies that the art is hiding.
Very literally. So our first like... Berwick Film Media Arts Festival Port of Call was this exhibition which was in Bankhill Ice House, which was in Bankhill Ice House, and it's literally what that is. It's a hill, which one could also describe as a bank, I suppose, if you wanted to. And it was an oldie timey ice house that I used several hundreds of years ago to keep ice cold when it wasn't cold, to like make fish like fresh for longer or whatever.
Yeah.
So, weird space. You kind of walk into a tunnel with a deep, big blackout curtain at the end and then stumble into a pitch black room.
Yeah, it's immediately just dark. And we got warned. It's like, oh, there's some flashing lights because, you know. But it's pitch black until there is something projected on a huge screen right in front of you. And when we first walked in, the first thing that was on the screen was like two skeletons like hugging each other. Honestly, how we felt. Then we stumbled to some seats and managed to like watch the film, which... was cool.
It was an experience.
But I think this wins like best venue that we experienced.
Oh my god, I think so.
Because the tone of the film and then the like feel of the environment like worked so well. I felt like I was like part of it.
Yeah, definitely. It was like a series of things. So Animistic Apparatus, there's like the kind of branch of these three different exhibitions that were on across the festival. So we got to see this one that's called Fireworks Archives, which is, this is a very difficult name to pronounce, Apichatpong Wirasthakul.
Well,
I think it's a Thai name, but it says Mexico, Thailand was like the places of production, origin, whatever. And yeah, so it's set in Thailand, and it's the artist, to quote the little bit of paper that you get, is offering to the potent spirits of his home region, shot in the sculpture park of a little known nonconformist temple in the northeast of Thailand. And it's basically all these beautiful, cool sculptures and just, like, kind of setting off fireworks in them.
Yeah. And then it's, like, only lit by the light of the fireworks. So it's, like, strobe light, kind of. And then the sound of the fireworks as well. So it's, like, only loud noises and flashing lights.
Yeah.
And then, like, glimpses of these, like, sculptures.
Yeah, definitely. And the cool thing about it, with it being in this, like, weird, completely, like, enclosed, stony space, sitting on, like, a flimsy little... wooden bench thingy, is that you could feel every like explosion and bang and pop and stuff. It was really cool. It was really immersive.
Yes, definitely.
I'd say I didn't really get it, but overall the experience was like kind of pushed up by just what a cool environment to see a thing in.
Yeah, and I love that, like a very creative venue.
Yeah,
that it just worked so well. Like I think that maybe even some of they might have had an echo or something.
I think so.
But...
maybe one of those things where it was like it's such a small room that it probably did echo a lot, but then there was so much banging. Yeah, so it was kind of all going all over the shop.
No, it was a fab first step into the festival, and. It wasn't technically like a films. Was it technically a film screening, or was it more technically on the art side?
It was technically, I think, more of the art exhibition side.
But that's what I like. The lines are blurred.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, visual arts. Ooh. Oh, but that was great. And that was like a fun first step. And then where did we go after that? I can't remember. We went along to the
Turner.
Yeah, wow, I completely forgot we did that.
Because,
so,
like, there's too much to talk about. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to, like, say we went into a gallery,
the Granary Gallery,
and there was Turner paintings. Mm-hmm. They were beautiful. It was about his experience, like, painting northern scenes. So there was, like, Tynemouth and Lindisfarne and loads of cool stuff. But I'm skimming over it because hopefully we'll do another Turner episode and we can talk about it in full, but there is far too much.
There really is.
One thing that was cool is while we were there, totally unplanned, there was like a tour going on. So there was a big group of people.
Curator was giving a tour.
So it's that was cool.
That was pretty cool.
And if we'd had more time.
Since we didn't listen to it, but in theory, very cool to listen to.
But it's nice to see that sort of thing happening, and it didn't deter us from looking around the exhibition, even though we weren't a part of it. So
yeah, exactly.
Cool things happening. And then we wandered around.
Yes, and I believe we then went to the gallery that Dave recommended we go to.
Yes.
It was very cool. So the gallery, first of all, has a mint name called The Sky Has No Surface.
And it's a mint space. Cool.
It's like an old house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It kind of gave me vibes of like Bar Loco.
Ah.
Like System Gallery.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Mm-hmm. And in that, like, it's very much a house, but it's also kind of going for that almost white cube, like blank canvas. But then the artwork's also interacting with the fact that this is an old building that was once like potentially a residency or not a residence.
Yeah, a residence.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
And not art lingo, just life lingo. Yeah. But, fab. 10 out of 10.
It was so cool. And I think they only had this exhibition on for the duration of the film festival, which is great, really, because obviously lots of people are there for the film festival.
Yeah.
So, like, we were there for the film festival, for example.
And you could tell that, like, they'd given that some consideration, because I think pretty much everything in that exhibition, which was Quivering Horizons.
Yes.
I don't know if I've mentioned that.
You didn't.
It was a group exhibition. All had like links to film, even if they weren't films.
Yeah.
So there was, I mean, the most obvious one that wasn't a film was there was loads of like printouts of like photographs and artworks and things, but they all kind of related to like clouds, or a lot of it related like the cloud and clouds and like digital, physical, like that was cool.
Yeah.
But then there were actual film stuff. And can we talk about the coolest thing?
Yeah.
That was there.
It was so
and it was
great.
The most fun. There was a piece, and we don't know who the artist is, but we're going to amend that as soon as we find out. We are going to credit them.
Didn't bring the bit of paper with us like a fool.
And I didn't write it down or to make any effort on the day. So
we are both fools. Glad we established that.
So there's that. But it was a piece, a video piece, at the very back. You had to walk through all the other rooms to get to it. And it was a tiny room. We don't even know what it was for. Like, it wasn't a living space. It could have been like a pantry or something. And it was a vid, like just a screen and a piece called The Floor is Lava. And it was just like clips of films spliced together, and it was like parts of film,
like action films generally.
Yeah, where vehicles were not on the ground.
Yeah.
So like, think Fast and Furious, like in between skyscrapers kind of
stuff.
Yeah,
like Fast and Furious, Dukes of Hazzard, Transporter 3, I believe, was on there. I've seen all these films. They're all trash.
Yeah. What was the one with the curved bullets?
Oh my God. Wanted. That movie was so stupid. Does anyone remember that? James McAvoy and Angelina Jolie. Let me know
she
if
like
you do.
She leaned into the microphone so excited there, like as if she was going to get an immediate answer. But please.
Call
like,
in.
Tweet.
Oh,
who remembers? You'll just get like, I remember.
Yeah, I'll know exactly what it's about. But the best thing about seeing this piece is that I didn't look at the like what it was called first, because it didn't the name wasn't next to the piece. You had to have the bit of paper to see where it was in the floor plan, I think, something like that. But so I was like watching this, I'm like, oh, this is kind of funny, because it had just like the sound that was on the movies. Like, there wasn't any other kind of music or sound created for the piece. It was just straight ripped out of the movies.
Yep.
And then I saw The Floor Was Lava. I'm like, haha, get it. That's great.
It was fun.
And it's only like a 3 minute long piece, but I'm pretty sure we watched it through like twice. It was great.
Yeah. And it is like that sort of stuff's just fun. and the time and effort it must have taken. Oh, I always think to get all of these clips, I'm going to appreciate it anyway.
Yep.
We've seen a few films like that. I think we saw something at System, which was like just sound clips of things talking about the sea and water and sailing and mermaids and all that sort of stuff. And you just think, God, like the time.
It's kind of like, do you know when people do like compilation videos on YouTube, like of either like the favorite parts of a series or like characters doing a certain thing, like all the characters' scenes and whatever. Like,
or like,
how do they watch the original thing when it airs, making notes while they do it to then go back and quickly rip, or do they just have to watch it millions of times? I guess if you're like a true fan, you wouldn't mind, but
you're obviously not a true fan, so you'll never understand.
I truly won't.
We're not even talking about anything.
No, just
in general. So, now that that's sorted, now that we know we'll never be true fans.
Yep, of anything ever.
Oh, I do want to give a mention of a cool slide machine.
Oh, yeah.
That we saw. So, it was like an automatic slide thing. So,
well, it wasn't automatic. You had to press a button.
Oh, well, I never got the chance to press the button.
I was pressing the buttons.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's great.
Did you think it was automatic?
Well, yeah, because didn't see anything to tell me otherwise. It just started going and I was like, cool.
Love it. But it was like, you know, like proper old timey like slide machines where you have your slides and you put them in the little like white border thing, you slot them in the machine, you press the button, and it's just a fancy little slideshow. Think, what is it? There's that Simpsons episode where Marge's sister comes back from a slideshow and interrupts the whole family into watching it. It's like 300 slides long and they don't want to be there.
Yeah,
imagine that, but fun.
An art.
It was Tintagel, somewhere up in Scotland, I believe. There are slides of in and around Tintagel.
Yeah, snapshots.
Mm-hmm.
They look like found images.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know if they were.
Neither
do
I.
Making things up.
Speculating.
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, that's kind of what it's about, isn't it? Speculating. They didn't have any, like, they had the names of the pieces, but they didn't have any information about it, so you could make up your own mind. Yeah. And that's a nice thing about art. We say that a lot.
Yeah, no wrong answers.
Mm-mm.
And no silly questions.
Mm-mm.
Well, my question to you is what we're going to talk about next.
Ooh, well.
In this quick fire of art.
Yeah, well, we'll gloss over the fact that we had a really cheap lunch and the nicest pint I've had in months. And we went along to this very cute little, well, because doing that then having lunch, we completely missed the film screening one we're going to go see. So then we decided, oh, we'll see some more art instead. So we went to the main guard in Berwick, which I assume was some kind of guardy place.
Maybe the main one.
So maybe the main one. I like the connotation there. And there was this, there was an exhibition on there separate to the festival about, what was it called? Like the Something King. It wasn't the Rebel King. It was whatever. It was some film with Chris Pine in it that was set in Berwick and was therefore filmed in Berwick a couple of years ago. And apparently it's on Netflix. I'll try and find it and I'll put a link to it. But in a tiny, again, really tiny little room, which probably was a pantry or something, was another art piece. But it was a short little film called Duoma Underground. And it was very, I was going to say amazing. It is amazing, but that's, it's,
Should we use the word awesome in the same way we did when we talked about Foul and Awesome Display?
Yes, I agree with that.
Be awesome in the sense that it's like awe-inspiring, but not necessarily in a good way.
Yes. So it's by an artist called Tim Alciofi, and it's in, he's from Syria, I believe, and it's literally from last year. It's in a kind of town neighborhood in like the eastern suburbs of Damascus. It was when like they were getting absolutely bombed, and so everyone was like hiding in the cellars, and it was just him recording on his phone, like him and like his family and his friends all kind of hiding in the basement. And then there's a particular clip that I just kind of that stood out to his it was like a bunch of guys, like all different ages. There was a kid in there, there was an old man in there, it was like a group of friends who might have been like late 20s, I want to say, all just kind of chilling with their little like surgical masks on, I guess, like for dust, for when inevitably the bombs did drop, because they were just waiting at this point. They knew they were somewhere nearby, because they were like literally like live on the news, and they were saying, oh, well, this bomb set off 1 minute ago. I was like, well, how long does it take to get there? 2 minutes. And he was like, oh, right. But then it could take like another few more minutes to detonate. And pretty much as he says that, there's a massive explosion, like rocks the entire basement. He's like, oh, so that was it. And there's like, there's a really interesting kind of levity to how they're talking about it. And literally as it was happening, I'm sure like two of them were taking a selfie with the masks on. Yeah, and one literally says, like, a selfie even in death. Yeah. And they make such light of it. But you've just got to kind of consider, like, how normal, I guess, that was. Like, to just be like, right, oh, it's another day of dropping bombs. Let's go hide in the basement for, like, the entire day. So obviously you're not going
to... Like, let's just, like, do what we need to do. And, like, let's just, like, the cogs just have to keep...
Yeah.
They're always in motion. Like, life just carries on. And it's...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was, like...
It's quite harrowing. I think that's the word I was looking for before. Harrowing.
It's the perfect word for it. And I could have watched the whole thing. And we couldn't. And this is the thing, like, because there's so much to do. And there's... Yeah, we try to have, like, a rough schedule.
Yeah.
But you're always going to be left, like, with, like, one thing. Like, oh, I just wish I could have seen a bit more. And I think that's our thing for that
time.
And
it sucks as well because it was only 11 minutes long. And we must have caught about 6 minutes, I want to say, before we had to run back up the one hill Beric has to get back to the mountains. But it was amazing. Like, I'm
very glad we saw it.
Yeah.
Basically on a whim.
Pretty much, we're like, right, well, we've got like half an hour to kill. It'll take 2 minutes to get down this hill, 10 minutes to watch this thing, and then another like 10 minutes or whatever to get back to the cinema to see the next film that we're going to see. So we like try to like thingy it, but we couldn't see it straight away because the room was really full. But either way, we're really glad we saw what we did. It was just so interesting. I'll try and have a hunt around for it and see if I can find a link to it anywhere, or at least a trailer or just something.
Yeah.
So we'll try and do that because it was like a really important thing to watch, I want to say.
Yeah, God, yeah, like it's a snippet into a world hopefully most of us will never know.
Yeah.
And so important that we know that it's happening and it has happened. And oh, God, it's just unjust.
Yeah.
Oh, there was a little baby.
I know, there was a little lad in the video. And he was like, just like under like the covers and stuff. And he was like really upset and stuff. And someone behind the camera was like, oh, let's try and get some sleep. But literally as he's saying that, there's just explosions rocking about somewhere on the surface. It's crazy.
Speechless.
Yes.
Very hard.
And then the film we're wanting to go see, similar-ish themes, I want to say.
Yeah. Very different execution.
War in the Middle East. Very different. apparently this is like... a really good, cool must see. It was part of the Essential Cinema program, and I'm not going to say it wasn't. I'm just going to say I didn't get it.
That's fair. We're not always going to get every piece of art. I also am a bit perplexed.
Yeah, perplexed, confused.
Maybe I just feel like we don't have enough information.
That's the thing. So this happened to me a lot in uni, where I was like, right, we're going to see this film. Didn't know anything about it, then would have a lecture about it afterwards and I'd be like, oh my god, yeah, okay. So I feel as though if that had happened, that would have been great. As it was, that didn't happen, and we picked this film based on its time slot, because like, right, this film should finish 5 minutes before the next film we're going to see. It started 50 minutes late, so it didn't, so I had to skip out early. But it was called 100 Faces for a Single Day from 1971 by Christian Garzi, and it's kind of, yeah, so it's like set in like 70s or I guess 60s like Beirut and Lebanon, and it's kind of like about the civil war there and like all this kind of like societal critique and just general kind of like all the kind of factions involved with all of that. And there was an artist, like one of the festivals like picked like a few artists like do stuff, and one of the artists was picked to give like a kind of foreword on it, which was quite interesting. Like, she gave like a good bit of information about it, saying that like, well, first of all of this dude's films got like destroyed, and this one was smuggled out apparently, and it was like, it's like one of those ones where I was like, ooh, it's like controversial and like criticizing like the government, I guess.
I mean, the fact that we don't know is an issue.
Yes, it's like in theory really, really cool.
I mean, I'm very glad we got the talk at the beginning, because I'd be God. Even
imagine
more
if we
confused.
Didn't have that. Oof.
Yeah, so I'm not saying it's not significant and important. Not a clue what else though. Like,
yeah, it was interesting. So I assume,
I think a lot of it was lost or mashed up or
like maybe it was damaged in some way, because there was like weird like bits clipped out. It was all dubbed, but that might have been just a product of the time, because it was like the 60s and like materials are hard to come by. So maybe it's like the original sound film or whatever got lost or destroyed when it was getting smuggled out of the area. I don't know, but some of it was dubbed, but then sort of in like Arabic or Farsi or something, and then some bits were just in French. And yeah. then avant-garde is a word that's used in the description of this. And I do get that because it's very just odd, which I think is a good...
Yeah.
Avant-garde is a fancier word for odd.
But I'm going to go straight out there and say it and just say... I feel like the story of the film is more interesting than the story in the film.
I would agree. I would agree.
So well, like, I'd love a film about the film.
It probably exists, you know. I'll Google. We'll find it.
Yeah.
That will help us understand. But we're going to brush past that because we've got more to talk about the next thing that we're going to go see.
This is like the grand finale.
Yes.
We went to go see like a series of like film screenings in the main room of the Maltings.
So like Berwick Film Media Arts Festival has like, I think they're all competitions but under different categories. So the one we went to go see was the new cinema competition, but there was like the Berwick, like it was like cinema features and like something else. So, like they're all different categories of, I want to say generally short films apart from I assume the features category. So this was a collection of short films. There was four, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And this competition comprises the festival's view of some of the most distinctive and unexpected works of new cinema and artist moving image being made around the world. This one in particular, each one had like an emoji. Like there was like a crown and like a different crown and like a horse, like, you know, on chess.
Oh.
And one was like the little castle rook thing. So this was one of the crown ones. I would argue the king's crown one, if you're looking at like a mobile game of chess where they don't have the full pieces, just the symbols. This is the king's crown.
Okay, yeah, I follow you.
So I'm just going to read the little paragraph because like each one for each different like strand was different. So this one says, ricocheting from point to point, this might lead to discovering new people, ideas, and forms of communication, breaching familiar spaces close and far. Or is it perhaps the eternal return, connecting us with family, compatriots, or community? I think that sums up the general kind of themes of the films.
Very concise. I like it.
Yes.
So how are we going to do it? Because I think we both have favorites.
Honorable mentions.
Yes,
or
that works.
Honorable mentions and favorites.
Should we work up to favorites?
Yeah, go on. So you can do the first honorable mention.
My first honorable mention. I don't know what you're talking about, so this could be quite a risk.
We'll find out.
But my honorable mention that I was so close to talking about and then ended up not talking about was Dear Babylon by Ayo Akinbade.
Yeah.
Close.
And I only know that because, like, they were introduced. Like, oh, thank God.
And I have not the capacity to remember that.
That's fair enough.
So
it's been a long day.
Oh, this film was great. Quick synopsis. This is, I'm gutted. I'm not going to talk about it as my favourite. So I'm just going to fully take this.
Go for it.
And it was, so it was a documentary, but it had fictional elements to it.
Yes.
So it was like a documentary. It was kind of meta. So it was about like filmmakers in the film making a documentary, and the documentary you were watching was their documentary, but not because they're fictional.
Yes.
And it was about some film students in London, and like you meet them at this like party, and you meet them just as this like fictional housing bill comes in that affects people in London and like the housing situation in like zones 1 and 2 in London. And as I've just been to London, I'm like fully in that. Like I know what they're about and I know what they're talking about, or trying at least. Like I've got that empathy. And it was just about like kind of like talking about people who live in tower blocks. Is it necessarily a bad thing? Is like, how is social housing evolving? What was it? What should it be? And it talks to residents and architects. And it was just great. I loved it. It was kind of political. It was all about how like architecture impacts people's lives in a really practical way. And just had like a really like uplifting end.
Yeah, like it really emphasized like the importance of social housing, especially in central London, because I mean the housing bill would essentially price people out and then allow like bigger developers to buy up the space and then create like luxury apartments or whatever. So obviously people who can't afford to live there get pushed to the outer boroughs, if indeed still in London, like maybe it's like zone 4 and outwards is kind of where they got moved to because they weren't given like enough money and stuff. And that's like real problems. Like it's a fictional bill, like,
but it's real problems.
Yeah.
And this is, I mean, it's just like a lot, I don't know, it's what a cool way to talk about like social issue. I think it would be great to talk about with like kids and stuff, because that fictional element reminds me of a lot of documentaries I saw when I was a kid of like, you know, I feel like CBBC would do them like really little like features of like, and it would be like you're following a kid learning about something, but you are the kid. So yeah, really well done. And I'd love to, I think this is the last film in a trilogy.
Yes.
And I'd love to see the other two. So that's, put that on my to-do list.
Yeah, perfect. There we go.
What's your honourable mention?
Well, my honourable mention is a film called Distancing by Maiko Riveza. And it's interesting. It's kind of a more artsy kind of documentary, I guess. They're all, that was like a common theme of all of these. They were like pretty much like based in like kind of documentary like filmmaking styles and stuff. And it's kind of, it's a personal story and kind of, it's almost poetic, I would say. It's, the director is like, he was born in the Philippines in Manila, I think, and he has been living as an illegal immigrant in America for like 25 years. And so like a large part of this film is, I don't know who the footage is of, it's of an older person, I think it might be his grandma. It's just like just footage of his grandma's face, I think, like just lying down. And he's the, there's a taped conversation between the two of them talking about buying plane tickets. So he's like, right, well, I got these tickets for this much. And it's like, oh, well, last time I got a return to Manila, it was like this much. And then they're talking about it and he's saying, oh, but I don't need a return though. She's like, what? And she, so she knows that he's not going to come back. Oh, wait, I don't think I said that. His decision is to leave America. There we go.
Yeah.
And obviously when he leaves America, he can't come back in because he, like, especially in the current political climate over there. So he, basically his decision to go to Manila, see like his homeland, all that kind of stuff, I assume they've got family over there, and means he can never come back to America, which is really the only home he's ever known. So it was just really interesting. It was shot on 16mm film, which is just a cool fun fact. And it was just, yeah, it was interesting.
It was like poetic, and it was like kind of like lonely. I was getting lonely vibes. The way it was shot seemed very, like the distance was there, like the distance that I like to think is mentioned in the title refers to not only like physical distance but like emotional distance and
like familial distance,
and like that, like the distance of like what is home, is it where you are, where you're from, where you're going, what's
and like in theory one could potentially argue like the act of making this kind of document, like this start of his journey, could kind of be a way to distance himself from the fact that's actually happening. Just so much to think about.
It's crazy. I once met, when I was in America, I met a guy our age who was Mexican, and he'd lived in America all his life, like he would have moved here, like not moved here, moved there when he was a baby. And he couldn't go back to where his family was because if he left America, which is where he lived all his life, he wouldn't be allowed to come back. What?
That's crazy. What? I know. It's absolutely mental.
So he just, and I mean, like, I think is a lot of his family had gone back to Mexico, so he just like was alone, like he was just like, well, I just have to make it work. And I'm just, and he, when I met him, he was just like traveling, just like just figuring it out. But what a strange,
I know, like that's
a predicament to find yourself in. It's strange that's like allowed,
but well, isn't
it,
who
just are we to say?
But yeah, honorable mentions, very very honorable, very good good films, but we're gonna, we've got my favourites, so I'd like you kick off with yours, Rosie.
Okie dokie. Well, my favourite was, I think, was it the final film?
Yes, it was.
And it's called Receiver by Jenny Brady, who is Irish. And it's about a lot of things.
Oh, several.
But it's kind of, what I took away from it is about, like, it's about layers of communication and specifically looking at like deafness and deaf history, or those of hard of hearing, and how we communicate generally, and then within the scope of kind of taking the idea of like being heard very literally. So like, who does society listen to, or who can generally be heard in the conversation, whether it be like actually physically heard, or that heard in the sense that their words have gravity. And she did this by, because I know in the process, because there was a bit of a Q&A afterwards, and she was saying she worked in like a deaf community in deaf schools, and she's like put a lot of hands-on research and experience into this. But I think I like the way, like, the tools that she used to describe it. She kind of took a lot of, it was quite a sporadic film. Like, there was a lot going on. But I think that then, she was saying, that reflected conversation and communication is like that. It's all over the place. It's imperfect. If you've ever read a transcript of any natural conversation, it is horrible and it's so hard to read. And I always think, was it like GCSE or A-level? I can't remember.
I've got anthologies.
Yeah.
Do you have the food one?
Yes.
Yeah.
So if you did like Lytton Lang, I think it was, if you did the combined.
AQA?
Yes.
Yep.
And like part of it was English language in, I think it was like in literature and in life was the module.
I think so.
So you had to look at like speech, like speeches and like plays and poems and whatever, and then like actual transcripts. And an actual transcript is just horrific to read because it includes all the like ums and ahs and pauses and stutters,
fillers,
and when people talk over each other. And my mum actually posted something on Instagram recently, not Instagram, Facebook, about like, I'll post it because it was so good. It was things, it was words, just the words like, I can't hear you if you cover your mouth, but the words were kind of half covered by her hand, or like, and it was like, I can't hear you if you don't speak clearly. I can't hear you if you, it's just about kind of conduct yourself in a way that in a way that like maximum people can understand you. And that doesn't mean like speaking really loud and slow, it just means be considerate. So there's like, the film kind of took parts like educational things, like I didn't know in deaf schools whether if they're teaching people to like speak and like make the right sounds, they use like, or they used to use, I don't know if they still do, a candle that was lit and you'd speak in front of it, and if you were pronouncing your F's right, the candle would blow out.
Yeah,
because obviously you can't hear yourself, so so interesting.
And another element of that was towards the end of the film, it was like a young girl and a speech therapist were speaking in front of a mirror so she could see the sound she was making.
Yeah.
Cool.
But then that was contrasted with things like a TV news conference by, I think it was like of deaf people speaking and signing, but then there was dubbed over for the listeners, the viewers rather, with voices, and then these people were arguing and they were like, so it's like deaf people arguing and speaking over each other and it's just madness. And then it's like, and if that's how I felt listening to that, how the hell do they just feel in general everyday conversation? It must be maddening. And then the most, it started off, I want to talk about how it kicked off, because this was
very
probably
interesting.
My favorite introduction to any film of the day. And it was of a conversation where apparently it's a thing where like, I don't know when it was, like the 90s, it happened a lot. And like,
I think in the 90s or the early noughties.
Earlier, I don't know. Where if you were on the phone, sometimes you could like get cross wires and like other people would accidentally join your phone call and
like,
stuff.
That's bizarre. What?
And I'm imagining it must some like work something like walkie-talkie frequencies or something. I don't know. But it was really funny. It was about like some American phone call where like another person accidentally like enters a conversation and like, I mean, they're like sassy Americans and they swear and they're rude. And it's really funny. But yeah, there was lots going on. And the takeaway for me was, well, I also, whilst watching it, was thinking about it. It achieved its goal in that I was thinking about what it is to be deaf and what it is to be heard. And I was thinking about my friend Ewan, who has passed away, but he was hard of hearing. He was deaf. And another link I was thinking of is while I was in London, cast your mind back, the Shakespeare plays I went to go see, the Globe's really fun at like, you know, with Shakespeare you can mismatch, like men can play women, women can play men, like race, gender, like all this stuff, it's all up in the air because it's a play, it doesn't matter. The, the players, that's the whole point, they're pretending to be something that they're not, so like it's all fun and games. But in As You Like It, two of the lead roles were deaf people. So Cecilia the princess was completely deaf, so she didn't speak at all and all of her lines were in sign language.
Ooh.
And then can't remember the other character, but it's another main character, and it is the character that says all the world's a stage and the men and women are but players and that whole thing. That speech was delivered by a woman who had a speech impediment because she was deaf, but it was amazing. That was so cool. Like, I think that's amazing.
That's really cool.
So I was thinking about all this, and I was thinking about like how I've experienced deafness in my life and like how much I actually know about it. And like, I know like odd bits of sign language. I know thank you, and I know applause and things like that. And
I only know thank you.
Know how to spell my name, things like that. But I've decided I would love to learn sign language.
Yeah.
So now,
like, that should definitely be taught in schools. Like, 2020. Everyone hates learning French. Like.
Yeah, I wish I'd never. I mean, I can't. I can only speak this language. So, you know, all those years of French and German were really useful, clearly. But yeah, 2020, I'm going to learn sign language.
Yay, that's awesome.
So that's thank you, Jenny Brady. You are responsible for this. It was just like all those things. You know, like thinking about Ewan, thinking about what I saw in like at the Globe, and then seeing this, it's like in quick succession. I think that's just the way to go.
Yeah, awesome. Oh, that's so good.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, the last favourites that we're going to share with you this fine podcast and day.
Indeed, the last thing we saw at Berwick Film and Media Arts Festival 2019 was, well, it wasn't the last one, that was the last one, but you know, last, whatever. It was great. Again, documentary style. It was called Meeting Uncle Yuji by Daisuke Kosugi, and oh, I just loved it so much. So something I love a lot, like, I don't watch too many documentaries, but when I do, I love, like, personal stories, like, character pieces, essentially. Obviously, it's great to know, like, more about a world issue or whatever, but I love these. Like, they work really great in shorts, because obviously, if it's a person, just, like, a random person, so this is the uncle of the filmmaker. He did a documentary about his uncle. I love that, because I would never have known about him any other way.
And what a character.
Oh, Uncle Yuji, honestly, what an absolute lad. So the director, Daisuke, was a former insurance man in Tokyo, which is a funny sentence because he's like literally our age, he's like 24 or something. And like the film starts with him talking about his life, how he was in school, all that kind of stuff. Just a quick kind of background on him, how he's like is in a band, how he loves music, got like a little bit rebellious, and so, you know, he just moved to Norway because he got sick of being an insurance person and doing all this, being like this. His family would talk about how they reminded him of his uncle, who he'd never met, because his uncle, at about the same time as he moved to Norway, his uncle moved to New York. This would be in what, like the 70s, I think, 70s or 80s. He moved to New York because he just really wanted to be a musician. Like, that was his passion. He loved it, and he wanted to go to New York to like explore this. And the director was like, oh my god, that's so cool. Like, I've got like a rock star of an uncle, that's mint. So he kind of built up this, like, I guess he built up kind of an image of him, like a character of this man he hadn't met yet. And so he was like, yo, Uncle Yuji, can I come over to New York and like make a film about you? And I want to like meet you and like learn about you and like see what you do and all that kind of stuff. He was like, oh yeah, cool. And so he does. And I don't know what genre of music Uncle Yuji makes. It's kind of his interpretation of popular American music. So like,
could it be like Ugerian? Like, give him his own. Ooh, like
trademarked.
Yeah.
Tell us no. But it's amazing. So like, he's got like a fairly modest apartment somewhere in New York, and he, like, music isn't his full-time career. I don't know if he wants it to be, based on what you were saying, though. So he works at a Japanese restaurant 6 days and nights a week, and on his one day off, he makes music because that's his passion. And there's like a really nice kind of conversation between him and Daisuke saying, like, that's my day off, like, I want to do that, like, I came here to make music, and if I wasn't doing that, I wouldn't be doing anything. Then why would I not be doing anything? No reason. Like, he wanted to make the most of his free time, and he's like released several albums. We heard snippets of them, which I absolutely loved.
Yeah, from his 2000 and 2002 albums.
Yes, can't remember what they were called, but it was a really interesting experience in the cinema. And the director talked about the decision to do this, like, in the Q&A at the end. This is how it started off, I believe, as well, the film. It started off, so
I don't know if I was the only one, but I was like, what is happening?
No, I was also. I'm sure everyone in that room was like, what the
is
fuck?
Something gone wrong? Like, I was like, uh-oh, this is awkward.
So basically, imagine, you know, black screen, and then in the bottom right-hand corner, kind of like in more, I want to say, old music videos, he'd have the title of the song, the artist, the year, the production label. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what he named his production company as, though. I'll have to try and find that out. And then, so that faded off, and it was just a completely black screen, and just one of his songs playing for like 2 minutes, or however long it was, and then the title would come back on at the end, like a traditional music video, to remind you of what that was, or if you like tuned in halfway through. And I'm not going to say it was bad music. It wasn't something I would listen to. But yeah, it's just, I mean...
To give you an indication of what this music sounds like, I didn't think I liked the film until halfway through. Because the music was like a lot.
It was.
And then by the end, it'd win me over.
But, oh, very much so.
But at the first half, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
No way.
Yes way.
But then it grows on you.
It really does. And I think it definitely grew in us more because the character of Uncle Yuji grew in me quite a bit. He just seems like just a fantastic, lovely person. And it was just really cool seeing like the director, his nephew, like, kind of getting to know him a bit. And in the Q&A at the end, he says this was originally going to be quite a different film. I think he had something in mind making it like a lot more about the music, and like I think his original idea was based on his kind of preconceived image of this man who he hadn't got to know yet. And then mm-hmm. by the time he got there, he was like, oh no, that won't work.
Yes.
So then it was much more this kind of like lifestyle, mm-hmm. like very
kind of like, I don't want to say gritty because it's not me, it's not no, gritty, like, but like, you know, that like really real,
fly
like,
in the wall-ish, no frills. Like, yeah. Yes, no frills. That's a good way to describe it. Because it's like literally just them. It was just Daisuke and his cameraman, Oscar, and Uncle Yuji just in his apartment, or like they were out in the park, in Central Park for a bit, just doing his day-to-day. Well, not his day-to-day. It was like just him doing the music bit. So obviously one day out of the week. So I don't know how long they were there for to film. But he was saying that basically when his uncle wasn't there, he was just waiting in the apartment waiting for him to come home. Mm. So just super interesting. It was just like a really lovely kind of character piece, and it was just delightful.
Yeah, interesting to consider that the like the intention of the film changed halfway through. Mm-hmm. And actually thinking, I don't know if I like heard this or understood this correctly, but I like the idea that, yeah, he went with the intention of kind of talking about his uncle. And like, yeah, this idea of who he was versus mm-hmm. who he actually is. And then how that, I think he wanted to do more about the scene, the music scene in New York, and maybe where his uncle fit into that. But mm-hmm. the whole point was, what he found out was that his uncle hadn't been, as soon as he moved there, and he discovered all this music. Because it's really interesting that like, that the filmmaker went knowing about the different music scenes going on and kind of went with that intention of, mm-hmm. exploring that a little bit, but when Yuji went, he didn't know about it, and then because of finding out about it, I feel like, didn't he stop performing live? He stopped working in a band.
It was,
and he started just making all the sound himself and like setting up his own studio.
His studio, by the way, is just in his tiny little kitchen. He's got like sound panels and stuff, and in between them is like his fridge. He eats cereal out of the one same bowl. He's like very much got his got his little habitat. But that's a good point, actually, what he was talking, it was in the film, and he was saying that, like, when he first moved there, I can't remember if it was a friend from New York or back from Japan, he was saying, like, no, like, to make it music, you gotta do it all yourself, like, don't bother with all these bands, don't bother with this live show, and he just kind of really took that to heart, and that's, I guess, how he wanted to do this, to make music, and
I think he was saying, he's not sure if it's even about the music itself, it's kind of about making the music.
Yeah, so that's his like passion and joy, like that's what he does, and he loves it.
Yeah,
and it was just wonderful. I'll try and find a link somewhere so you can watch a trailer, or if the movie, I doubt the movie's online, but I'll find something about it, because it's just a wonderful film. And I loved it.
It was really nice. A shining star in the program.
It was lovely.
And I want to draw a contrast towards that film and what was the first one? Distancing.
Yeah.
But like the other way around, whereas the other one was like about the it's like, well, they were both about distance, but one was about the separation and one was about the bringing together. And they were both, they had that feel of like home video is definitely the wrong word because that like might degrade what it is,
like, but homemade, that like there's a definite contrast between those two films and the other two films.
Yes, because those two films were about like the point of view of the filmmaker, whereas the like others were the point of view of the filmmaker but told through another party. It wasn't like
it was
this is through
personal,
my eyes
and, I would say
that's
personal stories versus like kind of more grand scheme like societal kind of issues and all that stuff.
So it was like, I just think those four films together, there's so many links you can draw and like they were just great. I'm so glad we made it to that screening.
Oh my god, I know.
I think that was a wonderful way to end the day because we'd been running around the whole day,
very much literally running around.
And after that it was nice to just like hunker down, watch four fab films and then have a lovely Q&A. Well, we did ask nothing but enjoyed other people's questions.
I can never think of anything to ask. It's always like 2 hours afterwards, like, oh, so I would like to have known that. I'm just not that quick, unfortunately.
I think it's good if you want, if you know there's a Q&A, I have to be thinking of a question.
Oh my god,
as like, it's happening.
Yeah,
like,
I have to like really push myself to
like look for a question. So and like, unless I absolutely have to, or unless when I'm watching something, I just want to enjoy it.
Yeah.
So when I don't ask questions, as I feel like many listeners might empathize with, it's not because I'm not interested. Mm-hmm. It's because I was interested.
Yeah. Too interested. Yeah.
But if it was something I had already seen or knew about, that's when I'm like, question master.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely. But yeah, it was mint. Berwick Film Festival is just lovely. We've decided next year, one, we're going to go back, and two, we're going to stay for at least one night. Because there's so much stuff, guys.
Last year we did the first day. Mm-hmm. This day was the Saturday, so I think that's like the main day.
Yeah.
And then now we're going to do 24 hours next year.
Buddy.
2020, yeah.
But yeah, that wraps this up. I've realised now it's been nearly an hour.
Ooh.
So... yay. If you've stuck out this long, thank you. But I mean, just so much to talk about, a wealth of amazing art and creativity in the wonderful, wonderful town of Berwick.
Yes.
Love it. A way we like to wrap up these podcasts is to talk about something that we're looking forward to. It could be something that we're looking forward to doing, seeing, experiencing, something like that. I would argue that looking forward to Berwick 2020 is too far away to count.
So not that.
Nope. So Rosie, what are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to, well, I've got kind of a busy week, but I'm looking forward to it.
Okay.
Because we're recording on a Monday today. Yes. Hello. And the week ahead of me is going to be hectic.
Very much
but
so.
As hectic as it will be good. Mum gave me a ring like a few weeks ago, randomly asking me if I wanted to go on a road trip, which I do. Mm-hmm. So we're going on a road trip and we're just going away for the night on like from Tuesday to Thursday.
Oh,
and the reason for that is on the Tuesday, I'm installing work at Hearn, and on the Thursday, I'm seeing the work at Hearn. Yeah. So that's that.
Oh,
what
that's
are you
delightful.
Looking forward to?
I am looking forward to an exhibition that's coming up at the Hatton because I've been getting emails about it from the marketing person. It's like, oh yeah, that looks fun.
Yeah.
It's called Artist Rooms by Roy Lichtenstein, and it's like pop art and stuff. And like, just I never looked too much into pop art, and it just looks really cool. Yeah. So I'm excited to go.
Ooh, so stay tuned. We may or may not be talking about some pop art soon.
Yeah, and I love the Hatton, and it's just
any excuse. I do like the Hatton a lot, actually.
Just a nice space, and it's always fun just being on a university campus, especially when I didn't go there. I'm like, huh.
Yeah, kind of, we're like still in your space. Just about the age where you can get away with like kind of looking like a student.
I think that's probably the secret joy. I feel I was like, I could be a student here. No
like,
one knows.
No one will ever know.
I'm an
tricking
early...
you. Like you're walking past everyone, tricking you. I'm tricking you.
I know you think I'm a university student, but I'm not.
It shows what you know.
But yeah, excited for that. Should be good.
Nice. And on that note.
Yes, thank you so much for really kind of sticking with. We're nearly 59 minutes, and I think that says 5 seconds.
And if you're not absolutely sick of us, you can catch even more of our antics at Instagram and on Twitter, at Hey Art What's Good. We've got an Instagram, no. We've got a...
We do have an Instagram, though.
Email.
We do also have an email, heyartwhatsgood@gmail.com, and a website.
With a blog and stuff. A contact page on there. It's so good.
Yes.
We have to go. It's been an hour of talking. So.
God, we're the worst. Bye.
Thanks.